Well, good evening and welcome to the John Whitmer Show. Watching a replay of the tail end of the Royals game, I understand they win it, but, you know, it's close. But let's build them a stadium anyway. happy you joined us tonight here at your local liberal resistance headquarters, where we proudly champion the conservative principles of limited government, individual liberty, free enterprise, and traditional values. Thrilled to have you with us. If you'd like to call in, our studio lines are open. You can reach me at 316-869-1330, by email at john@knssradio.com, on Facebook and True Social at The John Whitmer Show, and on X at John R. Whitmer. Reach out. We'd love to hear from you. Two things coming up. Guy Benson is coming to Wichita on August 5th. We're working to see if we can get him on the show. Got another little hat tip to you on a special guest. We are working to have Mark Levin back on the show. We will, as soon as we have that date for you, but we are going to have him on, just working on when, but we'll have the great one, Mark Levin, on the show. I've had him on the show two or three times. It's always great. It's always fun to have the great one on the show. And we're doing another live remote. We're going to go back down to AFP's headquarters at Union Station coming up on August 10th. We'll be broadcasting live, inviting folks to come on out, enjoy a live broadcast. We will have all of the guests will be in studio, so you can meet folks, do a bunch of interviews, bring the audience in. We'll be broadcasting live again from AFP's headquarters. And it's going to be a great event, and it'll be sponsored by our friends here locally, Hunter Larkin, my buddy Hunter Larkin's going to sponsor this one. It'll be at AFP's headquarters. We'll bring you more information, so keep an eye on the John Whitmer Show Facebook page for more details, but just mark your calendars. Sunday, August 10th, we'll have another live remote broadcasting live. Tonight, got a great show for you, great lineup. If you've ever seen the series Navy SEALs, I love that show. It's a really good show. It's on right now on Paramount Plus. But Delta Force operator and star of the TV series, Tyler Gray, will be my guest. He'll talk about, you know, obviously some of his exploits as a SEAL, but and a little bit about his story. He's become an advocate of PTSD. He was wounded in combat. We'll talk to him a little bit about that and about his fight with PTSD and what he's doing on behalf of veterans. Attorney, columnist, and author Leslie Corbley will try and explain why another activist judge, last week an activist judge barred the Trump administration from revoking Medicaid funding for Planned Parenthood. Senator Ty Masterson will join us for a special announcement coming up here in a little while. You may have heard, but Senator Masterson made an announcement earlier this afternoon. I understand it went really well. I was in the midst of preparing for the show, so I couldn't make it out there. But, yeah, I mean, I'll let him give you the announcement. But for those of you who watch the news probably already know, but anyway, we'll have Ty on here in a few minutes. Sedgwick County Commissioner Jeff Blubaugh will walk us through the county's proposed 2025 budget. And Kyle Wiseman will continue our candidate profiles with Kyle Wiseman. He is a candidate for election to the USD 259 school board, the seat currently held by last week's guest, Diane Albert. So should be interesting. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls at 316-869-1330. Speaking of elections, I know I kind of mentioned this last week. I kind of talked about it a little bit last week. But starting tomorrow, live in-person voting begins for these local elections. And to give you some perspective, we had about 15% voter turnout in the last midterm election. So the last off-year election in 2023. And these, you know, folks, these are the elections that decide your school board, your city council, your tax rates, not Washington, not the White House, right here, right now. Voting has already begun in person, begins tomorrow. And let me be blunt, frankly, if conservatives don't show up, we lose. It's that simple. The left will win. The Democrats will win. You know, if you want to keep woke ideology out of your schools, if you want to protect girls' sports from biological males, if you want to stop taxpayer-funded nonsense like drag queen story hour at your local library, then you have one job, and that's to vote. And I don't want to hear your excuses. I'm too busy, or it's just a school board race, or I had a lot on my plate. I sound like Bill Clinton. You know, I'll wait for the general. No, that attitude is exactly why we're in this mess to begin with. Because if you sit on your derriere, then the weaker candidates get through, or the candidates at the school board, or the you know, KNEA, the teachers unions, because they get their folks out. We got to get our folks out. And let's look at the numbers. 2 years ago, just 2 years ago, as I said, only 15.33% of eligible voters showed up for the primaries. That's just over 15%. That's not just low, it's pathetic. And that's how we lose these races. That's how we lose control of budgets. That's how we lose our communities. That's how we go from district-wide school board races in Wichita to district-only school board races. Because we lose a seat and the Democrats get control, and that's how we get bond initiatives. Fortunately, we beat that one, but they're going to try again. They've already said they're going to try again. And then what happens? You wake up one day and find out your tax dollars are being used to fund $600,000 porta potty projects in downtown Wichita because some liberal consultant in Portland said it's inclusive. You wonder why the city council is dropping millions of dollars on nonsense, or the county commission spends millions of dollars on an elephant barn, or out-of-town artwork installed at the local water treatment plant. Well, it's because not enough conservatives are voting against that nonsense. You wonder why your property taxes keep going up, why your private property rights are being eroded, why the city is buying and owning property, spending money that they don't need on projects that don't benefit everyone. Well, it's because we aren't electing the right kind of people in the right kind of positions. It's because you didn't vote. It's because 15.3% of the populace only voted. And if you're one of those people who complain on social media, who gripe to your neighbors, who curse at your TV every night, who go to Pachyderm Club and complain, but don't show up and cast a ballot, you're part of the problem. You may not want to hear it, but I'm going to say it anyway. Shame on you. Because if you sit this election out, and let me be crystal clear about what you're voting for by not doing this, by doing nothing. If you want drag queen story time in your public libraries, stay home. If you want $600,000 porta potties, stay home. If you want millions of tax dollars to go to elephant barns or to county, if you want them to go to the people to run the elephant barns or art installations no one asked for, stay home. Oh, and by the way, the artists, they're from out of state, too. So we're not even hiring local artists. If you want your property rights stripped, stay home. If you want your taxes raised, stay home. If you don't care that only 19% of students in some districts are proficient in reading, stay home. If you don't care that only 13% of students in some districts are proficient in math, stay home. If you think it's fine for students to be forced to read LGBTQ propaganda in elementary school, stay home. If you support biological dominant girls sports, biological males dominating girls sports, stay home. If you're okay with local government ignoring student outcomes, academic performance, fiscal discipline, and parental rights, stay home. But if any of that outrages you, and it should, then do something about it. Get up, get out, get engaged, and vote. This election is where your voice actually matters. Everyone wants to scream about the presidential election every 4 years, and that's all well and good. And next year we'll be invigorated because, you know, Dr. Marshall will be on the ballot and there'll be a governor's race on the ballot. But the truth is, your vote for school board, your vote for city council, your vote matters and has more immediate impact on your daily life than anything happening in Washington, D.C. You want to stop DEI? You want to stop CRT in the classroom? Vote. You want to ban sexually explicit materials from libraries? Vote. You want to fire incompetent superintendents and elect board members who care about student outcomes, not political activism? Vote. You want to cut spending, reduce bureaucracy, bring common sense back to government? Then by God, vote. I'm not asking you to storm the beaches of Normandy. I'm not asking you to show up at a polling station. I'm not asking you to donate, although by God, if you can, do it. It takes 10 minutes out of your life to shape the next 10 years of our community. The left shows up. They always do. Even when they don't know what's on the ballot. They just do it because they're told to. They look for the D, they vote for the D. Why? Because the far left activists are organized. They're motivated. And they've been playing the long game, targeting local offices while we've been asleep at the wheel. Look at our schools. Look at the garbage curriculum. Look at the test scores. Look at the policies. So what do we need to do? Find out where your polling place is. Make a plan. Go before work, during lunch, or right after dinner. Drag your neighbor with you. Bring your spouse. Text your church group. Post it on Facebook. Knock on doors. Write a check. If you believe in the Constitution, if you believe in parental rights, if you believe in protecting kids, if you believe in financial sanity and government, if you believe in less government, if you believe that boys are boys and girls are girls and taxpayers deserve better, then you have a moral duty to vote. So I'll say it again. If you want the other stuff, stay home. You want six-figure porta-potties, stay home. You want wasteful spending, stay home. Otherwise, show up, vote, take back your schools, take back your cities. But if you don't, do us all a favor and shut up, because if you don't vote, you forfeit your right to complain about the outcome. We'll take a quick break, and then Leslie Corbly will try to explain why an activist judge barred the Trump administration for revoking Medicaid funding for Planned Parenthood. You're listening to The John Whitmer Show. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to The John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Want to remind you about our friends at Americans for Prosperity. My wife and I were both out yesterday taking part in their Day of Action. It's the third Saturday of every month. It's a great way to get engaged. If you're looking for a way to get involved in a campaign, trying to find a way to get energized to help inform voters, AFP is a great way to do it, to help make a difference, make your voice heard. If you want more information, you can visit AmericansForProsperity.org. Don't forget, they're bringing, wouldn't you know it? I would have one of those moments. Guy Benson. They're bringing Guy Benson to town here coming up at the, first of August. So, we're going to try, like I said, we're going to try and have him on the show as soon as we can. But again, visit AmericansForProsperity.org and sign up today. Well, another activist judge is at it yet again, this time temporarily barring the Trump administration from revoking Medicaid funding for Planned Parenthood, partially freezing a provision in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act just days after the president signed it into law. The temporary restraining order by U.S. District Judge Indira Talwani, I guarantee you that's a Democrat appointee, lists 14 days and directs the Department of Health and Human Services to, quote, take all steps necessary to ensure that Medicaid funding continues to be dispersed to Planned Parenthood. Oh, yeah, I'm sure they'll take all steps necessary. Oh, my, whatever. With us now to kind of explain what's happening is attorney, columnist, and author Leslie Corbly. Leslie, thank you for joining us. Appreciate you working with us last week and working to reschedule. We're glad to have you on the show, my friend.
Thanks so much for having me, and thanks for rescheduling as well.
So, you know, this is what's funny about this is even Dems, even a majority of Democrats oppose taxpayer dollars going to fund abortions. Yet somehow this judge thinks she knows better than the rest of us.
Yeah. It's a pretty bizarre ruling. I've said this before. I wouldn't be surprised if this is ultimately overturned. I know the Trump administration has already appealed that decision. Congress has broad authority regarding how to spend money, essentially, how to spend taxpayer money. So the idea that they should be obligated, essentially, to fund Planned Parenthood rather than, reroute funds to other organizations they may think are better deserving or perhaps none at all, simply not allocate money, is more or less up to Congress.
Yeah, I do think it's funny. I was a state legislator for 4 years. Here we have once again a judge who doesn't understand the whole concept that Congress has the power of the purse either. I mean, where do these activist judges get off telling the legislative branch how to spend money?
I'm not sure. I think my favorite part of the ruling was when it said, oh, well, this Congress is singling out Planned Parenthood, essentially, which.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
they're
that's
right.
Not true. But to the extent that they were, I mean, what does it matter? Congress is allowed to do what they want.
Thank you.
With funds in that regard. So I'm not really sure why that's relevant. It's also, I think, interesting that, the Supreme Court recently ruled that states are allowed to, I believe it came from the Supreme Court, saying states are allowed to not route Medicaid funds to
Correct.
Planned Parenthood for their own, for their own Medicaid funding sources. So again, this just seems kind of off the wall to me. Congress is allowed, again, to decide how to appropriate funds. And in this case, they don't believe those funds to be going to Planned Parenthood.
Well, and what's going to happen next? Are we going to get an activist judge who turns around and says that Congress can't defund NPR and PBS because they were targeted? Because you would assume that that's going to be the inevitable next lawsuit.
Sure. I mean, I think we'll see. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, obviously, some of these entities, Planned Parenthood, NPR, and others, have been receiving federal dollars for a very long time. So it is absolutely true when Planned Parenthood says that, we're going to have to make cuts. This is going to be painful for our organization. That's all absolutely true. And so I think they have every incentive to attend the forum shop, find a judge that can agree with them. But the problem is, these rulings are so politicized. Ultimately, they're going to continue to be appealed. I don't see that those kind of rulings holding much weight. There's just in our constitutional system, it's very clear that Congress can allocate funds. And I'm not seeing anything in these cases that negates that. Okay, well, they simply don't want to fund you right now.
We're
maybe you should go to the people and seek funds from them.
There you go. Yeah, exactly.
You can get funding elsewhere.
Well, and that's exactly what NPR and PBS are going to have to do. They'll hold another fundraiser. They'll do another call thing. I mean, I know I've actually been down there as a volunteer at PBS and taking calls during one of their marathons, and that's what they'll do. They'll fill the hole. We're talking with attorney, columnist, and author Leslie Corbley. One of the things I felt was, I don't know if this was, I guess you'd say ironic, but the Supreme Court ruled last month that South Carolina can block Planned Parenthood from participating in their state's Medicaid program. You also had another Supreme Court ruling that barred nationwide injunctions. So this judge is just basically ignoring two recent Supreme Court precedents, correct?
I mean, more or less, yes. And again, I'm not shocked. There's always these kind of forum shopping, politicized lawsuits. It's kind of the name of the game. It's not going away anytime soon. I think we're in an era where this is a pretty popular method of attempting to block actions from administration that are not favorable. My hope is it doesn't become a tit for tat type dynamic where, those on the right begin to engage in this kind of behavior as well. But it's a pretty simple way to try to stop, a president's agenda from being enacted immediately, right? Because it has to be dealt with in court, right? And we all know courts don't move very quickly. So while I think ultimately this will not land in favor of Planned Parenthood, I don't think that's what's going to happen ultimately. It is certainly a pain, to have to continue to litigate some of these issues that frankly shouldn't, in my opinion, shouldn't really be litigated. I think you're absolutely right that most of those on the left, even, or Democrats, don't really have much of an interest in propping up Planned Parenthood. It's a pretty niche left-wing interest group, and I just don't think most Americans care to fund that, even if they think abortion should be legal. Heck, even if they think abortion should be legal through all 9 months, I really don't think most taxpayers are thinking, oh yes, I would like my taxpayer money to go to those organizations and entities. I think most of them that's just not what most people are interested in funding. So my hope is that, we're able to move away from this type of litigation in the future, but right now it's a way to for organizations like this that more or less rely on federal funds to attempt to stay afloat, right? With their funds are being
funded. Without a doubt, yes. Is there any way the judge here didn't know in full well intentionally ignore those two Supreme Court precedents? I mean, the judge clearly knew. They just chose to ignore, correct?
Sure. I think practically speaking, you're correct. I mean, obviously, legally speaking, they rely on, there's other...
You can thread a needle.
You can always, you can usually thread a needle. And that's what I think is unfortunate, though, because I do think it really decreases the public's overall trust in the legal system.
Right.
When they see these kind of things go down. Right. Because while you could thread thread the needle legally, I don't think that's very useful practically. And in fact, I think it's quite counterproductive practically because it yeah, it just decreases the public's confidence in the legal system, because everyone obviously can see through this, right? Okay, what's going on here? Why are we being required, essentially, as taxpayers to fund a specific organization?
Sure. Well, legally, they found that Mar-a-Lago was worth a tenth of what it really is worth, too. But, you know, legally and right are two different things oftentimes.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
If folks are interested, you've got a new book, Progressive Prejudice, mm-hmm. Exposing the Devouring Mother. If folks want to check out the book and if they want to connect with you, they can find you at Leslie Corbly, and that's CORBLY.com, correct?
Absolutely, yes.
Leslie,
the book will be coming out in October.
October, all right, fantastic. Again, it's LeslieCorbly.com. I appreciate you taking the time to join us and carry on the fight, my friend.
Great, thank you.
Thanks, Leslie. Coming up, Kyle Wiseman will be with us to talk about his campaign for election to the USD 259 Wichita School Board. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. You can always listen to us by telling your smart speaker to play KNSS radio. And of course, from breaking news to severe weather updates, just download the Always Live free Odyssey app to get started. And while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer. That's the best way to get all the live updates, or latest updates, rather, on the show. Every election cycle, try to bring you as many candidates as we can. It seems like the last few weeks, since we brought you a lot of them, we're going to do some more, not only tonight, but next week. We'll try and bring you at least a couple. So every week between now and Election Day, we'll bring you as many candidates as we can. If there's someone in particular you'd like to hear from, please let me know. That being said, joining us now is Kyle Wiseman. He is running for District 1 seat on the Wichita School Board. That's the seat that is currently held by Diane Albert. Wiseman was born here in Kansas. He earned an associate's degree from Butler Community College and a bachelor's degree from Fort Hays State University. His career experience includes working as a business owner. Kyle, thank you for joining us this evening. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, my friend.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. I'm always excited to talk to people and get the message out there and see what the community needs, because that's what we're here for.
It's what it takes. I've knocked on tens of thousands of doors. So if you're knocking doors, that's definitely the first step. Let me start with this. Why are you running? And in particular, since you're a registered Republican, you're running against a fellow Republican in a primary. So I typically ask, if you're running against an incumbent, are you unhappy with Diane's performance in office, or why you chose to run against a sitting Republican?
Yeah, put simply, I am very unhappy. I think most of the community is. My wife, she's a teacher here in USD 259. She works her butt off. My two boys, they go over to Heights. And I swear to you, every time I'm turning around, they're asking for more money. They're asking for more money. Then we've got the board asking for bond issues, but not explaining things, and really kind of feeling like it's dictated by the district telling the board what to do. And so when this opportunity came around, it's all about putting voice back into it, making sure that we're doing things efficiently. You know, the board is talking about doing a new bond issue, let alone they're giving people raises. While last week, my wife had to work for 16 hours without a dime. They said, we didn't have enough money for this training, yet administrations are getting raises. I'm not saying that the superintendent isn't working hard. I feel like he's a very hard worker and working individual. He does a lot of, you know, unique outreach, and I think that that's wonderful. But if you're on the board, you need to make sure that our tax dollars are being spent appropriately and efficiently. And I just feel like she's not been doing that.
Well, I could definitely relate to your wife. Our daughter went to Heights. So we didn't actually live within the Heights school district, but since she went to Coleman, all her friends went to Heights.
Oh, yeah.
So we drove her every, because, you know, you don't get free busing.
Nope.
So when we moved west, we still took her every day. I had to make that drive to take our daughter to Heights High School. So I'm intimately familiar with Heights High School. So we'll start with this then. Would you support, had you been on the board, would you have voted for the bond the first time? And would you support another bond? Because it looks like they're going to put one on the ballot, or try to put one on the ballot, next November.
So when the bond issue came up for the community, I voted no. It was one of those things that me and the wife kind of disagreed upon. But the fact is I want information. And when I feel like I'm confused, I'm not giving you free money. I make my boys do the same thing. So had I been on the bond, I would have said no. Looking forward, I'm still inclined to say no, but what I want to see is I want to see some actual transparency. I want to see the district kind of tighten its belt, if you will, and prove to the community, hey, this is how we're going to do it. This is the plan. I just don't want to write a blank check. So as it stands right now, I'd have to say no.
Since your wife's a teacher, she's probably gives you a unique perspective. Just 19% of Wichita students are proficient in reading. 16% are proficient in math. That means more than 8 out of 10 students are not at grade level. How would you propose to fix that?
So it's fairly simple. One of the things the wife and I have talked about is we have a problem with kids not being in the school. If they're not in the school, they're one year of chronic absenteeism, and I think they're 12% more likely to have reading issues. Give it 2 years of chronic absenteeism or even more, you got 27%. So Wichita, I think, currently had an 11% absenteeism rate, chronic absenteeism rate. So that's going to be the first step. We got to reach out to these parents. How do we get it? Do I have to go out and, well, you don't want me to rent a van, but do we have to get vans to get these kids to school? You know, and whatever we got to do, we've got to be able to use services that are available. There's wonderful programs where their parents can actually get books from, I believe it's birth to their first time that they're in kindergarten. And studies show that if kids are reading by the time they're in third grade at a good level, it's going to stick and it's going to hold. And so that's the first step. When it comes to math, we've got to make sure that we're helping the kids grow, because there's that saying where if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, you're always going to be looking at it like it's a failure. Our kids need the help, and as a community, we all need to step up. Whether I win, whether I lose, we need to step up.
You know, the district touts, by the way, we're talking with Kyle Wiseman, who's running for USD 259 District 1 School Board. The district touts record high graduation rates. It's at 84.3% for the class of 2024, which is a 5% increase from the previous year. But when you look at it, more than two-thirds of Wichita 10th graders scored the bottom level of state math tests. Among black students, that's nearly 80% scored in the bottom level. So the question I have is, you know, if their reading assessments and math assessments are so bad, and yet we're graduating these students, why are we graduating kids that aren't college and career ready? Maybe we should be holding these kids back. What, I mean, your wife's a teacher. What is she seeing?
So we've talked about it, and I do think that is one thing. When a kid advances, there's a few things that we need to look for. We need to look for, are they emotionally ready, and are they actually curriculum ready? You know, Kansas puts out some great standards and references that we can use to make sure our kids are ready. But I think a lot of times what happens is we start trying to teach for the test or trying to make sure that we're hitting those stats. And the fact is, the success is not just graduating high school. Success is going to be, are you successfully enlisted in the military? Are you successful at school? Are you successful at trade schools? Are you gainfully employed? Some people are going to go down that path. And I think that we need to actually look at what it means to be successful. And if we do that, what will inevitably have to come up are those test scores. Because I don't care what your test scores look like. If you can't tell me where Europe is located on a map, there's an issue.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. Kansas has seen a significant rise in K-12 spending, 53% over the last 10 years. And yet math and reading scores on standardized tests, which is the metric that we have to grade them by, NAEP scores, have either stagnated or declined. Do you think Wichita Public Schools are adequately funded?
They are adequately funded, but we could always use more money.
Oh, sure. You could always use more. The question is, is the money going to the right place?
Absolutely not. I was looking at some of the information, and I believe it was the AA. I'm going to butcher the organization, but it was a federal organization. It's on my Facebook page, and they were talking about the average administration costs of high schools across the nation, and it's 6.7%. Then I was looking, I think there was a Beacon report and several other reports, and even by the district's own budget, we're looking anywhere between 10 to 14% spent on administration. The question is, why are we spending it on the back rooms and not the classrooms?
I think I've asked that same question. Along those lines, Superintendent Kelly Bielfeld just received another pay raise. He already received a 3% pay raise as part of the standard pay increase. Do you believe the superintendent deserved that pay raise?
I believe that the superintendent works very hard for his money, and if I was in his shoes, I would go for it too. However,
yeah, I can't blame them if they're going to give it to them. They're offering it.
I'll take it. Yeah. But when we have teachers that have underfunded classrooms, when we have kids that don't have the books they need, when we're missing resources and people like my wife have to work for less.
When they're having to buy school supplies out of their own pockets.
Oh, yeah. We spent at least $500 to $1,000 last year funding her classroom just because we know that that's what the kids need. You know, so when I see things like that, it makes me mad.
No, I get it. You know? I mean, when the bond, one of the reasons I opposed the bond is because there were athletic fields and in the case of Goddard, there were press boxes and lighting for athletic fields and things like that. That's not helping graduate kids. That's not helping get math and reading scores up.
No.
And so I completely agree. One more question. I got to go to break. Board members do not receive pay. Some districts are considering paying board members. Again, that's taking money out of the classroom. If that would be proposed, would you vote for it or would you accept pay to be on the board?
I would absolutely vote against it. And to be honest, if I got it, I would donate it to groups like Panda where they've got the mentorships within our schools.
That's the answer I want to hear when I ask that question. Just for future reference, we'll take a quick break. We're talking with Kyle. Do you mind sticking through the break?
Yeah, I'm happy to.
Talking with Kyle Wiseman, who's running for District 1 school board, currently held by Diane Albert. We'll take a quick break. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. I want to remind you about my friends at Americans for Prosperity. Great folks who believe in freedom and opportunity. They're the keys to unleashing prosperity for all of us. Folks, if you've got the power to change the trajectory of our city, make your voice heard today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org and sign up. Get involved. Make your voice heard. And, of course, while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and find me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. With us still is Kyle Wiseman, who's a candidate for USD 259 School Board District 1. Kyle, do you, we'll go back to, you know, one of the things that's a core platform piece on the party platform, which is, do you support school choice?
You know, absolutely. As long as it's done appropriately, you know, I want to make sure that everybody is being held to the same standard. But when I look at it, I see as an opportunity for us to make them want to come here. Make them
competition.
Yeah, competition. Yeah. Like, why are we so fearful of what Wichita is going to compete against when they should be fearful of us? We've got the resources. We've got the community. There's some great schools out there.
Oh, you do. Yeah. I mean, the public schools certainly have the resources.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's be the best of the best. Let's stop worrying about who's in front of us or behind us and let's just get to the lead.
I like that idea. And that is really what you certainly have the money. The public schools certainly have the resources behind them, but they seem to be afraid of the competition. And that I think is really what it comes to. They're afraid of the Benjamins. They're afraid of losing out on taxpayer dollars. And frankly, I think competition would breed better success in the classroom and out. The United States Supreme Court recently sided with parents who want to opt their children out of LGBTQ books in schools. Do you agree with that decision?
As a parent, you should always have the right to do so. But also as a parent, I would always suggest that you consider it because sometimes conflicting points of view make us better human beings. You can't have faith without having the opportunity to not have faith. Does that make sense at all?
Sure, but ultimately you would support the parent's choice.
Yeah, it's the parent's choice.
I would agree with that. And if you want to choose that, let the parent choose that.
Yeah.
I would agree. Along the same lines, both nationally and here in Kansas, we've passed, the legislature recently passed protections from women and girls sports, ensuring that biological males can't compete in girls sports. Do you support that notion?
So this is the one that I'm going to have to dance with you just a little bit on.
I don't dance with men.
Okay.
But I'll lead if we do.
All right. Well, so, you know, the fact is my son was playing football as a freshman and I didn't want him on the field with varsity 18-year-olds because there is a physiological difference.
Oh, absolutely.
They'd lay him out.
The Democrats don't quite understand that.
Yeah. But so like, I think there has to be some sort of caution and we don't want our students hurt. We want to make sure liability is protected, but we also want to do the right thing. And one of the things that I am always fearful of is there are girls in boys sports that they can take you on. I mean, growing up, there were some pretty stout girls who I'm pretty sure to this day could throw down with me. And so what I don't want to have happen is where we're excluding women who can compete on that field. And so that's where that maybe kind of comes in. It's going to be, I'm going to look at the overall picture. I'm going to make sure our kids are safe I'm also going to make sure that the field is fair, but at the same time, I want to make sure that we're not going to keep people from being the absolute best and pinnacle of success.
Yeah, and I don't think there's really anyone who says that if a girl wants to, you know, be a kicker on a boys' football team, that there's any preclusions from that. I think the bigger issue is the biological males dominating girls' sports. Because of, and if that's really issue has come up, I know there was a kid recently, there was a girl who was kicking on a boys football team, and I don't really see an issue with that, because, you know, she's probably not out there throwing, you know, blocking on the offensive line, but I can see where you're going with that.
Yeah.
You're listed as a registered Republican, so I'll ask this question. Did you vote for President Trump? Did you vote for Derek Schmidt? Where do you stand on the party platform?
So this is going to be the fun part. I did not vote for President Trump. However,
did you not vote, or you didn't vote for Trump?
I did not vote for Trump. I did vote, but I didn't vote that upline ticket. And so,
hey, you're not the only one.
You know, the problem
we'll work on you on that.
the problem is, you know, just the economics of it. And I, looking back, I think President Trump has done some good things, but there's some things that, you know, I'm an international business major. And so when we're not wanting to trade internationally, it's kind of like shooting myself in the foot. So that's, you know, kind of where I was looking at it.
I going forward, I'd lie on that answer. If you know, I think if for a first time, is this the first interview you've ever done?
Absolute first.
You've done a really good job for a first time candidate handling your first media appearance. You've done a pretty good job. So kudos to you for that.
Thank you.
If folks want more information, if they want information on your campaign, or if they want to volunteer or donate, they can visit Vote Wiseman, and it's WISEMAN.com, correct?
Yes, sir.
Well, Kyle, I wish you all the best. By the way, just for folks know, it's not like you've, you know, had your driver's license suspended or a DUI or something earlier when you made that comment about not letting you drive the van. You're visually impaired, correct?
Yeah, yes, I am. So it is something that you'll see me walking around. You go to stick your hand out to shake it. I won't see it. But you know, other than that, I'm able to get around and do what needs to get done. I don't want no sympathy, and I want to make sure I get done with what needs to get done.
Well, I just wanted to point that out so people understood the joke, because I didn't want anybody to think, oh, God, the guy's, you know.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I appreciate it.
So, well, Kyle, I wish you all the best. And, you know, I think, for the first time you've ever done an interview, to sit down and do 30 minutes is not easy. So I wish you all the best, and, you know, we'll see. The primary is... Folks are out voting now. The primary is less than a month away. So best of luck to you.
Absolutely. Get out there and vote. Use your voice.
Yes, for sure. Well, we've only got just a minute or so left here. I want to take a quick moment to remind you, like I said, the advanced ballots have already gone out. In-person voting begins tomorrow. So this is so important. If you have questions about a candidate, if you're looking next week, we've got one more interview on this race that we're going to try and get to. We have a number of other school district races out in Mays or Goddard. There are other races. We're reaching out with candidates right now to try and get them to come on the show. But if you've got a candidate that you want to hear from, call, you know, shoot me an email, john@knssradio.com, and we'll try and get these candidates on the air so that we can have these kinds of interviews, because it's so important that you become informed about the candidates. That's the only way. You know, I mentioned it during the monologue. There's literally 15.33 was the voter turnout in the 2023 cycle. And at least then we had a Wichita mayoral candidate on the ballot. This time it's even smaller. The forecasts are that we won't even get 15% voter turnout. We've got to do what we can to get better voter turnout in this election cycle. There aren't that many primary candidates out there, but if you've got a primary coming up, or if you're interested in hearing from a candidate, please reach out to me. We'll do our best to get you on the air. Again, coming up after the top of the break, Senator Ty Masterson will be with us for a special announcement. In the meantime, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. It's appropriate intro music for our next guest. KNSS is always here for you. Let's keep it that way. Tell your legislators to keep AM radio in vehicles now by texting AM to 52886 and tell Congress to keep AM radio in a cars. And of course, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. And of course, give us a call. Our studio lines are open 316-869-1330. We'd love to hear from you. Well, you know, I was hoping, I was kind of promised. I mean, the last time we talked with my next guest, there was this implied deal. And I guess technically we are getting the stump on my buddy Pete Mundo.
We are, but you know, I wish I had brought that audio up.
That's true. We are getting the edge over my buddy Pete Mundo, though. By the way, speaking of which, this Friday I'm filling in for Pete. But so we are getting the advantage over Pete. But my next guest did kind of say that I would get the edge, and yet he went out today and he made a little announcement. But my next guest is Senator Ty Masterson, did kind of make an announcement today, but I won't steal his thunder. Ty Masterson, our Senate president, is with us now. Senator, thank you for joining us. Pleasure to have you on the show, my friend.
Well, thank you for having me, John. That wasn't on purpose to jump you.
Well, from what I understand, and I appreciate the invite, but I was my wife and I went out this afternoon. And we did a little door knocking, and we were a little warm for door knocking. But then I had to get to do my show prep, so I missed your announcement. I understand you had a big crowd out there, and you announced something. I will let you go ahead and tell us what your announcement was.
Well, for those who didn't see it, we formalized my campaign for governor out of Clemens Aviation at Jabara this afternoon. And it was, yeah, you talk about hot for door knocking. It was hot for an announcement. I felt, which made it even better. Right? I was even more humbled by, you know, getting over 200 people in a, you know, hot hangar on Sunday afternoon. Yeah, it was a great event. I mean, it was humbling. I was just thrilled to have it.
I heard there was a big crowd. I didn't realize it was that big a crowd. That's impressive. Well, congrats. Congrats to you on having such a big crowd. And now we can pivot into that question, that conversation, which is, you know, why are you running? I mean, it's, I know that, you know, folks who don't understand the way it works, it's kind of common that, you know, usually those in Senate and House leadership, you get two terms and then you can't run for leadership again. So you weren't going to run for your Senate seat again. So I kind of was figuring this might be in the works. But is that, you know, why run for governor?
Well, it was less about that than it is about where we're at with Kansas. Like I shared, you know, my tagline I've decided to go with is, let's take back Kansas. People don't realize for the last 15 out of the last 23 years, Kansas has been run by a liberal Democrat as the governor.
Oh, yeah.
And that has translated. So, you know, when I grew up, you know, we had a Kansas promise, you know, of, you know, safe communities and affordable living, you know, and a shot at the American dream. And I feel like under their governance in that time frame, that's kind of, that promise has been broken. So it's time to take it back.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, you know, people, when I talk to, because I get a lot of national guests, and some of them will ask me questions. How is it that a red state has such a blue governor? How is it that Kansas is, you know, second only to California with per capita in taxes? How is it that Kansas doesn't have school choice? Some of those things. How is it that we're an abortion destination for travel destination for abortions? Those kinds of questions. And that's all due to the last, well, it's due to Laura Kelly and her predecessors.
Yeah, I mean, really, those the worst four of all those 15 years were the 4 years where we had alignment between Laura Kelly and Joe Biden, or whoever was running the federal government. I mean, it was a terrible, you know, drop for Kansas. And it doesn't get covered in normal media sources. People don't understand. We have a crime problem. I quoted some of these statistics today. We had 35 violent crimes happen every day on average in Kansas last year, which ranks us actually lower than New York in public safety per capita. You know, and the education, you touched on that. 60% of our fourth graders are not proficient in math, 72% not proficient in reading. And the outcomes just don't match our public investment in public education. Not to mention the whole tax issue, right? 16th highest tax state in the nation. And there are a lot of good Republicans fighting in the legislature. That's finally why I decided to make the decision. Ultimately, the power you wield from the legislature is not big enough to tackle the out-of-control government when you have a liberal Democrat governor running the place.
No, and without naming names, there's not everybody who's running for governor on either side, be it Republican or Democrat, will be in line with what we need to do as conservatives in order to right this ship, will they?
No, of course not. I mean, of course you have Vicky, right? But she has a pass. I mean, she'll get every never Trumper, right? She'll get your pro-choice, pro-Trumpers. I mean, she'll have a fairly high floor in the race. But Kansas needs a fighter that can take it to the back and really move conservative issues.
So let me ask you, I mean, you and I have been at this a long time. Heck, I've known you as long as prior to even when I served in the legislature. I've known you a long time. What differentiates you from the other Republicans in this race?
Well, you know, I'm kind of the proven fighter, right? I can bring the results. I'm not somebody just talking about what you think you can do. You know, we've been in the fight and done it. And I think I have the ability. One thing that separates me is I connect to the common man because I am the common man. You know, I'm the only guy in the race that's not independently wealthy and can stroke my campaign $1 million check. Right. And so I'm the one that does relate to the people and what they're going through.
You know, Ty, as you know, I served in the legislature. I left the legislature in 2018. Since that time, the state budget has grown, and yet by 57%, but you know, over $10 billion, and yet our population over that same time has grown by only 58,000 people. How do we, and I know you and I feel the same way, that we have a spending problem, not a revenue problem. How do we fix that? How do we turn that ship around?
You need a governor that will sign those budgets and shrink the government. I mean, that's just, as long as you have a liberal Democrat in control, there's always a push. There's not a problem that can't be solved by a program, right, or government spending.
Yeah,
One of the big issues we've had is all that COVID money that flowed through our system, right? You had billions of dollars, which obviously caused inflation, right, come through that stimulus program and got put in, and that's ballooned it up. And then she has ballooned it up, you know, in all the operational costs. So it's going to be difficult. Honestly, whoever becomes governor next is going to have a very difficult time trimming that thing back.
So if you had, and this may be a little early because I know you've just announced today, but if you had your 100 days, your plan for the first things that I want to try and accomplish, what would they be? What's your goal on day one? What's your Trump plan on day one?
Well, obviously, there are things we can do when you're in the executive branch, right? Just like he did with executive orders, the thing you have to be careful about there is those have to be codified if you want them to last, right? So the next guy doesn't just undo it. But then just proposing a budget that really does trim government back.
Yeah, and the other thing, and I think we have the legislature to credit for this, is how important it's going to be on the same time that you're up for election will be the constitutional amendment to change how our Supreme Court is determined. It's such a big deal. And for those of us who support that notion, we have the legislature to thank for that. Lord knows if Laura Kelly had her druthers, that never would see the light of day.
And we can't overstate the importance of that right there, right? I mean, it's the court acts as an activist secondary legislator. You know, that's how you get forced spending, right? Like that we've had on K-12 and how you get a right to abortion in the Constitution, you get state-owned gaming. I mean, we have an activist court. That's also part of that whole take back Kansas. We have to take back that judicial branch as well.
Well, I should have done this during the break, but you've been really ahead of me on this. But if folks are interested, if they want to help you, if they want to volunteer, if they want to donate, most importantly, what's the website? What's the best way for them to get out to support you and get involved?
Oh, you can find us on WinRed. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram. All you got to do is Google me.
Well, and of course, they can also find your website, Ty Masterson. They can find you online as well. Ty, I appreciate you.
Yeah.
200 people at the announcement today, especially considering the heat. That's phenomenal. I know we'll have you on again. And of course, we will have, you've still got a whole nother legislative session to go through as well. So I guarantee you we will have you on the show then as well, my friend. Congrats to you and the family. I saw some of the pictures. It looked like you guys had fun and a great turnout today. So, best of luck to you, brother.
Thanks, man. I'm so blessed by my family and all the support they've given me. So thank you for the time.
Thank you, my friend. We'll take a quick break, and then Sedgwick County Commissioner Jeff Blueball will be with us to walk us through the county's proposed 2025 budget. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. I want to remind you about my friends at Americans for Prosperity. Great group of folks. If you're looking for a way to get involved, obviously you can volunteer on a campaign, but if you don't have a particular candidate, theirs is a great way to get engaged. Right now, I know they're working to help educate voters about that constitutional amendment. Great way to get involved and make a little green on the side. You have the power to do that, to help educate voters, make your voice heard today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org and sign up. And of course, while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and True Social pages, and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, Sedgwick County has released its recommended 2026 budget, which includes a significant overhaul of 911 operations and a notable increase in the general fund budget. The general fund is projected to increase by $18 million, reaching $643 million, while the total operating budget will see a $49 million increase, totaling $1.325 billion. The $624.7 million recommended budget would lower the county mill to 27.881 mills from 28.659 mills. Don't get too excited, though. That's not a whole lot of cut, just so you know. With us now to kind of walk us through some of the budget is Sedgwick County Commissioner Jeff Blubaugh. Jeff, thank you for joining us. Always a pleasure to have you on the show, my friend.
You bet, John. Thanks for having me on.
All right. I mean, I would cut everything and twice on Sunday if I had my druthers. So let's get into some of these things here. Let's start with this. It's too soon probably to say whether this would mean any real decrease on tax bills, because yeah, it's a decrease in a mill levy from 27.8 to 20 or from 28.6 to 27.8. But I mean, what is that really going to amount to on a $200,000 home? Like $20, $15?
Yeah. And John, you remember during my campaign, remember the mill levy cut last year? I think it was $4.
Yeah, yeah, it's nothing.
Or something and then like that.
But they still captured all R&R, so it was actually still an increase.
Right.
I'm assuming, are we capturing right. all R&R again?
No. We're actually going to be lower than that. And it's going to be a similar, it's not going to be a huge decrease in value is what you're seeing. And I think I've shared with you, you know, just as I campaign, my focus is going to be
appraisal process.
It's going to be on that appraisal
and process. And that has to be because especially if they're still capped, I'm assuming then they're going to capture part of the R&R, but not all of it.
Yep.
So really that mill rate cut is worthless. If a politician's out there running for reelection and they talk about cutting the mill rate, just ignore it because you're still paying more in taxes. Yep. But I gotta, you know, one of the things, like, as I was going through this, Jeff, that one of the things that frustrated me is, like, in this budget, there's two new elephant zookeepers at the Sedgwick County Zoo. Well, those are county employees. First off, we wouldn't have to have those if we hadn't spent $10 million on a new elephant barn. But it's things like that, you know, we're adding to payroll. Those are county employees. Yeah. Again, how is that helping? You're going to raise property taxes to pay for more elephant barn people. It's like, don't. And I know this frustrates you because it's still growing in government. You were one of those who thought we should maybe move to sales tax or something. Because again, it's property. All of this is being driving up property taxes.
So what I've noticed in my time in government is when we get scope creep, we end up getting issues.
Exactly.
And we look at scope creep. We go back to the 80s when Sedgwick County decided to contribute to the mill for WSU.
Right.
You look at the Sedgwick County Zoo when they got scope creep there. You look at Exploration Place. When we get out to the general operations, running the county jail, the sheriff's department, property right. taxes, the treasurer, when we get out of that scope, it seems as though this is where these issues
come. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I remember when I was talking with the members of the commission who supported the $10 million barn, and I was opposed to it. They were supportive of it. Well, now here we are a year later, and now we're hiring more employees because we built the barn. Well, you never told us that you needed to hire two new zookeepers. It's, again, it's like you said, scope creep.
And you remember last year when that barn came, it was after the election.
Oh, of course it was.
It was kind of like in the lame duck session.
Yes.
Hey, we've got an extra $10 million and that we're going to have to spend on an elephant barn. And then this year.
Didn't have to, but yeah, they wanted to.
It's, hey, now we've got to man this thing.
Right. Yeah. You know? Well, they should have thought of that when you built the damn thing instead of going to the taxpayers. How about let, you know, Wink Hartman or Phil Ruffin or one of these other rich guys put their name on it and it doesn't cost us anything. Of course, we're still paying.
At the end of the day, you're going to hear me go on and on about the valuation process. But you're right. We've got to cut the spending.
Yeah.
The spending's got to stop regardless of how you collect the bill.
Let me ask you another question. I know there's major increases in 911 funding, which I there's arguments that could be made on that. And frankly, I question whether or not there weren't any heads that rolled over that last incident. But Commissioner Howell has challenged whether they're needed, whether other counties operate emergency communications in the same way. Are his concerns valid? I mean, I know he got a little pushback on that. What are your thoughts?
No, I think so. We need to continue to, you know, there's been a lot of discussion around the 911 and with the Jensen Hughes recommendations and what's going to be the best path going forward. I don't know that it's just throwing 20 new employees out there. I think we've got to look at the overall processes and, you know, do you have to have two people on every call, you know, and Commissioner Howe speaks a lot about a direct non-emergency line so that, you know, now you've got two people on a call that's non-emergency line, you know,
right.
So there's some things that we've got to iron out there.
It's, you know, it's just, again, I like you just said, it's creep. It seems like another example of creep where we're not necessarily looking for the most efficient way to do things. We're just throwing more money at the problem in the hopes that it makes the problem go away. We're talking with Sedgwick County Commissioner Jeff Blueball. Getting back to what you were talking about in the appraisal process, that does seem to be the biggest issue that I keep hearing. And I'll give you a good example in the development that I live in. You and I have talked about this before. Because I've seen my home grow in value, assessed value by $100,000 in the last 10 years. And you also know that we've done nothing but mow the lawn. But in that same period of time, we've had a whole development of duplexes go up in the adjacent, you know, the guy used to farm. Now it's no longer farm. Now it's about 20 really nice little duplexes, sweet little homes, but they're valued at about $200,000 per side. So the units themselves, $400,000. And, you know, some other houses that have built single family homes within our development. So all that's doing is raising the assessed value on our home, but we've done nothing. And I think this is part of the problem with assessments.
And it's just the overall valuation process. And there's
right.
No check and balance.
There
in the
you
valuation
go. Exactly.
Process. 70% of all appeals, zero change. Commercial, it was around 85%, no change.
So how do we fix that?
So myself, Commissioner Howe, some of the other commissioners, we're working together on a type of bill of rights, so to speak, for the taxpayers. And we're wanting to ensure we have fair appeal processes within Sedgwick County as well as BODA. And we're working on a lot of things that are be going on our legislative agenda. You know, look, last year everybody said we're going to address property taxes and nobody did it. So I think it's time, as the largest county in the state of Kansas, that we get something out there on our legislative agenda and say, look, at least you've got to get the process correct for valuations. Because right now, you talk to some business owners, some business owners will tell you we're $1 million undervalued and you got poor folks down there in Southwest Sedgwick County that are on fixed incomes that are way overvalued that have a lot of deferred maintenance on their property and there's no way that they could ever sell that property for that time.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's the issue. And as you get folks that are older, seniors that are living on a fixed income and now they're looking at, I can't afford to keep making my property tax payment, or, you know, heaven forbid they get forced out of their homes. That's a real tragedy. And so that's where we've got to really address this.
We have a good opportunity here. We have an opening there at the Sedgwick County Appraiser's Office for Sedgwick County Appraisers.
Right. So I saw that.
I think it's time now that we start looking at what Sedgwick Countyans really want to see in that.
I'd love to see that. It's a good idea. I know the county will have two public hearings on the budget. It'll host its first hearing at 6 p.m. on July 30th, And then the commission is set to approve its budget right after the second and final hearing at a regular meeting on August 20th. The county has also launched an online public forum for residents to comment on the budget, correct?
Yes, yes, absolutely. We'll be having that evening meeting on the last Wednesday of the month this week and or this month, and we'll go through the budget there, and then we'll follow the other budget cycles and really hope that people reach out to us to let us know. I can tell you, you know, from doing this for 11 years on the Wichita City Council, this is my first county budget. The county operations really are ran a lot leaner than what I've seen at the city.
Oh, I think that's obvious. Yes.
At the same time, there's always opportunities for cost savings.
Yeah, it does seem like the county is a little more efficient with their spending than the city of Wichita is.
And you know, I never pass revenue neutral on the city. At the county, when I look at 37% of our budget is into public safety with the sheriff's department, EMS, you know, those are the things that will get me over the edge where I normally would never pass that R&R.
Well, those are core functions of government.
Yep.
You know, it's not, again, those are core functions. Now, the areas, you know, exploration play. And again, I used to work doing events for Exploration Place. So I could, but even there, EP, you know, some of the museums, I like Jim's idea of going to user fees or some kind of a sales tax or something like that so that those aren't taxpayer funded.
Some way of getting them off the property taxes.
Some way to get them. Yeah, I agree. And I think I know that you and Ryan Beatty are also working on some way to transition those off property tax into a sales tax or user fee.
I think collectively all five commissioners are ready to move the needle on this.
Yeah, I think you're right. Jeff, if folks want to connect with you or contact you, what's the best way for them to
do that? You can send me an email at jeff.blueball@sedgwick.gov or give me a call on my cell phone, 316-640-0656.
Brave man giving out his cell phone. We'll take a quick break to pay a few bills, and then Delta Force operator and star of the TV series Navy SEALs, Tyler Gray, will be with us. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. I want to remind you to stay informed with up-to-the-minute news by telling Alexa or Google Home to play KNSS, or by listening to KNSS on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn apps. And of course, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page, and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, Tyler Gray was the epitome of the warrior archetype, a Delta Force operator, a master of counterterrorism. He hunted the worst bullies in the world's playground, high-value targets, bomb makers, warlords, executing covert missions that never made the news. He's author of Forged in Chaos, a warrior's origin story. He's a leading advocate for veterans' mental health, specializing in PTSD and traumatic brain injury. He developed the LTSD theory, which explains chaos addiction and the neurological rewiring that occurs over time, helping veterans better understand their struggles. He's a former tier one operator. His military career ended abruptly when he was seriously wounded during a nighttime raid in Sadr City, Iraq, leading to a grueling 4-year recovery. He's also, many of you may be familiar with him, he was on the TV series Navy SEALs, which is available now on Paramount Plus. Tyler, thank you for joining us. And of course, thank you as well for your service to our country, my friend.
Absolutely. My pleasure on both accounts. Thank you so much. It was an honor.
Let me start with this. Despite, and I read some of the bio and some of the, you know, little snippets that I was able to find on the book itself. And, you know, some folks aren't aware of this. Despite rising PTSD awareness, we're losing more warriors at home than in war. Is that right? I wasn't aware of those numbers, but I looked it up and it's true.
Yeah. It's absolutely. I mean, if you look at the numbers of, you know, and don't get me wrong, many lives were unfortunately lost in Afghanistan and Iraq, as well as, you know, other things in the last, you know, war on terror. But we are losing far more at home than we ever lost to the enemy. And with, as you said, awareness and treatment options for PTSD at an all-time high, and the problem getting worse, not getting better, you know, for me, I had to look at this and go, well, maybe we've misdiagnosed, you know, the core disease.
When we say, and as I was looking at the causes, is this mostly suicide? Is it alcohol related, drug related? What's the cause of this?
I'd say definitely, you know, the highest factor. I don't know the exact numbers between the two, but definitely the suicide rate is, you know, between 17 to 22 a day, again, depending on how you look at the, you know, how you interpret the statistics. And, you know, obviously alcohol and drugs are a major issue, but I'm kind of more focused on the suicide part. That being said, they actually do have the same exact base cause.
You mentioned that you think that we've fundamentally misunderstood and misdiagnosed PTSD. What prompts you to say that?
Well, it started with, you know, me after the recovery and starting to experience certain issues and going to, you know, mental health professionals, the VA and also civilians. And everyone, you know, told me that I had PTSD, and I said, okay, great. What, you know, I mean, obviously I'd heard of it, but what does that exactly mean? And they told me, and it just didn't fit the way I felt. And the more I asked questions, the more they tried to kind of, I just felt like it was a round peg in a square hole. And so I set on a, you know, multi-decade quest to try and figure out an answer that worked and made sense for me. And for me, that was coming up with the concept of LTSD. That fit how I felt.
Is this something, you know, it's like I've had a lot of alcoholism in my family. My dad, before he passed, was 12 years sober. My brother was 15 years sober. And a lot of alcoholics will tell you that you never recover. You're a recovering alcoholic. Is that something similar with PTSD? Is it something you get over, or is it something you're just constantly battling?
Well, to your point, I mean, I detail my experience in rehab in the book, and I actually disagree with both of those things. I don't think someone is an addict for life. And the reason they are currently is because we're treating it the wrong way.
Okay,
and again, the book goes into that. Yeah, but the real reality is we're treating both addiction. We're treating mostly addiction as some kind of a moral failing or a character defect or a result of trauma. And the reality is, and same thing, by the way, exactly with PTSD. And the reality in both of those cases is that the actual problem is, and I'm not saying that the mental aspect isn't, trauma is a major part of it, but what the trauma does physically to the body is very, very important. It's only now being, you know, understood. And until, if you think of any mental problem, the reality is every problem is mental and physical, because
right,
the brain is in the body. And if we treat these things as just mental, we're never going to solve them. We're going to treat them, and they're never going to be fixed, because the core disease needs a mental and physical solution. And that's what I discovered. And the revelation of that and how it worked for me forced me to write the book to tell others.
That is true, because, you know, you'll see many alcoholics, for example, that, you know, they may treat the mental elements, but then they'll take up cigarettes, or they'll take up gambling, or they'll take up so many other things because they're still treating the physical dependency or whatever. So I can see where you're going with that. Let me ask
you a couple.
We're talking, by the way, with Delta Force operator and star of the TV series Navy SEALs, Tyler Gray. Let me kind of pivot. I've got to ask you just some of the about your life and about some of the things that you've seen. First off, the series Navy SEAL, I love it. I watched it. I know my wife and I've watched it. It's available on CBS and Paramount Plus. How accurate is the show? I mean, how well does it describe in reality? I mean, obviously it's Hollywood, but how accurate is it?
Yeah. So I was, you know, in addition to being on camera as an actor, I was also a producer on the show. I was a writer on the last season, and I directed several episodes. So at the end of the day, the way it works is that, you know, look, it's Hollywood, and you've got to fictionalize stuff. You know, if you told people sitting around waiting for a mission, no one would watch it, right?
So right, yes.
Definitely, you know what I mean? That's just, it is what it is. So it's definitely, you know, it's a Hollywood TV show. That being said, myself and there were many other veterans working on that show, both in the writer's room and on set. And we all went way out of our way to instill as much authenticity as we could. And quite frankly, CBS and all the executive producers went out of their way to make sure that happened, or allowed us, I should say, to do that. And so the show, I'll say this, it's as accurate or authentic, I should say. You know, it's not realistic because it's not real, but it's as authentic of a military show as we could make on network TV. I can tell you that. And the real point of that show is it's really not, as you know, not about, you know, the missions and the cool stuff. It's about how the job affects you and your home and your families. And that's the core point of the show.
No, without a doubt. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, there's cool combat scenes and there's cool missions, but it really is more about the families and the interaction between the characters. And to, actually, it's also more about how the characters react post mission than it is the missions themselves in many cases.
Absolutely. And, you know, look, the missions, I'll say this to your point, you know, the missions are fictionalized to a degree. I mean, if that show was real, we would have gotten a Medal of Honor probably every episode, right? the heroics would be off the charts. But I can say that the parts with the families and the parts not in combat were, in fact, I'll not only say authentic, like truly authentic, but I would quite frankly say we probably downplayed, if anything, you know, the severity for network TV. If it was on HBO, it would have been a far darker show. But look, we used the conduit of a SEAL team, and this is how we all saw it. We were using the conduit of a SEAL team, because they have a great brand, to tell universal military stories. And that's why veterans like the show so much, is because they could identify with the experience of the characters, whether they were in a SEAL team or, you know, never deployed overseas and worked really any part of the military. And so I'm very proud of that.
You've got a new book out. It's called Forged in Chaos, a warrior's origin story. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, absolutely. So the you know, when I started looking, as I said earlier, I was being told it was PTSD, and then I, you know, really went on a quest to find out what I felt the problem was. And the thing that I came up with is every single veteran that I came across and talked to and really, you know, listened to their stories, I realized that we all had relatively the same childhood. And if you think of PTSD, the first word is post-traumatic stress disorder. A lot of people don't realize that what that actually assumes is a pre-traumatic stress baseline. It assumes that you had, you know, this pre-traumatic stress life that you had, and then, you know, traumatic stress comes in and it throws everything for a loop. But for me and all the veterans and first responders I talked to, we didn't have that experience. We had super chaotic childhoods. And so to lead into the LTSD theory, which is really why I wrote the book, what I realized is when you are in complete chaos as a child, your brain neurologically rewires itself to be calm in chaos. So chaos in the environment becomes your default state or homeostasis, and that's your comfort zone. Conversely, when the environment becomes calm, then your mind becomes anxious and chaotic because it fears the chaos happening again. So you create chaos in the environment to get back to your homeostasis.
Because that's what
that's what your normal is. And I can tell you, I've told hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of veterans and law enforcement, and everyone, when they hear it, they go, yep, that's my experience.
Fascinating. Well, again, it's called Forged in Chaos, a warrior's origin story. If folks want to check it out, if they want to get a copy, what's the best way for them to do that?
Anywhere books are sold, obviously Amazon's the big one. I'm doing autographed copies on my website at Tyler A. Gray, graywithane.com. And again, anywhere books are sold. And I just appreciate it. I want to get this message out there because I know how it helped me, and I truly believe in its ability to help others.
Tyler, thank you again. Thank you for your service to our country, and carry on the fight, my friend.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
We'll take a quick break, and I want to hear from you. What do you think? Our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Don't forget, coming up here on, literally couple weeks. Guy Benson will be coming to Wichita on August 5th with our friends at Americans for Prosperity are bringing Guy in. Great way to get involved. Great way to make your voice heard. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org. And, of course, also we'll be broadcasting live at their offices coming up on August 10th. We'll have the John Whitmer Show live remote at AFP's headquarters on August 10th. Check out the John Whitmer Show Facebook page. We'll post something probably this week. We'll have that up, and we'll have an event page set up for that.
A lot of fun stuff.
Yeah, coming looking up. Forward. I love the live remotes. I think they're a blast. So yeah, had a great crowd, like 30 people last time. Hopefully we'll have just as big a crowd next time. So
John, real quick.
Yes.
During the break, had a guy call in. Didn't want to say, but didn't want to get on the air.
That's okay. Not everybody does.
That's okay. That's why I'm behind the mic here, and I'm not in front of a camera because I have a face for radio.
There's a reason I'm not behind a camera.
Okay. Quickly,
same reason.
He asked about, and he wanted your thoughts on the funding cuts for NPR
and
for
PBS.
Yeah. A couple minutes here.
Yeah, well, I do Kansas Week on PBS. PBS, mm-hmm. Usually once a month or so. They rotate, but I go in. In fact, I was in there just recently. First off, these are independent broadcasters. They don't need taxpayer money. They can hold another telethon. They can do whatever to get private money to make it. So it's not like they're going to go off the air. They're two different entities and two different my thoughts on this. On PBS, part of the problem with PBS is certainly with some of these kids programming, they've gone pretty woke. I mean, when you have Sesame Street. Yeah, yeah, and the Muppets that are starting to do some woke stuff there, I think that's what prompted that. NPR is intentionally liberal. I mean, it came out during the hearings before Congress. They found 87 registered Democrats working on their editorial board at NPR. Zero Republicans. So,
and it shows.
It definitely shows. But when you have a taxpayer-funded, quote-unquote, news, I don't think they're news, propaganda arm, but when you have a taxpayer-funded news organization that is 87% editorial board, or excuse me, 87 registered Democrats and zero Republicans on the editorial board, you're no longer an independent. You're no longer nonpartisan. You're no longer unbiased. And so at that point, you shouldn't receive taxpayer money. So I don't have a problem with the cuts. They're not going away. And, you know, it is what it is. They'll survive. And if you feel that strongly about it, write them a check. That's kind of my thought. So stick around next week. We've got some great guests. In the meantime, carry on, fellow deplorables.